Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Over 37,000 people are confirmed dead after last week's earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. But as CBS's MTS Taibbi reports,
there are still moments of extraordinary hope, like when this 13-year-old boy was rescued from the rubble 182 hours after the quake first struck.
More from CBS's Cammie McCormick.
Even with the recoveries, the hopes of finding survivors is fading fast. The UN's Martin Griffiths.
That's coming to a close. And now the humanitarian phase, the urgency of providing shelter, food, and a sense of the future for these people. That's our obligation now.
Griffiths was in Aleppo, Syria, where they're still struggling to get aid in.
Four flying objects have been shot down since February 4th, three of them since Friday over Alaska, Canada, and Lake Huron. CBS's Nancy Korda spoke to National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
How big was it?
We're still trying to assess what that was.
That won't be easy until debris from this weekend's objects can be recovered.
After the spy balloon incident about a week ago, the nation's radar system was adjusted to make it more sensitive. And officials say that's a big part of the reason that they're now detecting more objects. But what lawmakers want to know is what the criteria is that President Biden is going to use for deciding when to shoot objects down now that the U.S. is detecting so many more of them.
Eight people, including a police officer, are injured in a crash in Brooklyn, New York. Authorities say the driver of a U-Haul truck intentionally drove off the road and struck pedestrians. This man was working in the area at the time.
We just heard a whole commotion happening. We heard a whole noise, a whole bang, U-Haul truck coming down the block. So we see that it has something under the car, and everybody's yelling out for the truck, the U-Haul truck, to stop, and he wouldn't stop.
A suspect is in custody. A new report from the CDC shows a worsening gap in the mental health between teenagers. CBS's Alexander Tin.
Nearly one in three teen girls have seriously considered attempting suicide. That's up from less than one in five a decade ago, and nearly double the rate of teen boys who have considered suicide. The CDC survey also found other worrying trends over the past decade in teen girls, including an increase in sexual violence and substance use.
A judge in Georgia ordered that parts of a special grand jury report investigating efforts by former President Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election be released later this week. CBS's Graham Cates.
Robert McBurney, the judge, ruled that most of the report could remain undisclosed while the Fulton County District Attorney's Office continues its investigation, but said that the introduction, conclusion, and a section in which the grand jury discusses its concern that some of the witnesses it interviewed may have lied under oath should all be released.
This is CBS News.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Expect more state money to go to local communities in Wisconsin to cover their public safety costs. Milwaukee Democrat Lena Taylor and Racine Republican Van Wongard were on the Upfront TV program yesterday. They both say they expect an agreement on shared revenue. Taylor and Wongard say the sticking point will be exactly how the money can be spent. Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Dan Kelly is turning up his attacks on conservative rival Jennifer Durrow. At a Republican Party event in the Madison area last week, Kelly again said he would not commit to endorsing Durrow if she wins the primary. He went on to question her conservative bona fides and even her understanding of the law. The primary is a week from tomorrow. In sports, ESPN reports the New York Jets are asking the Packers about trading for quarterback Aaron Rodgers. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on the Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
the city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Well, the cons have finally found East Palestine, Ohio on the map. And Gun Fetish Barbie, Lauren Boebert, tweeted out that Pete Buttigieg finally emerged today. Not a single comment about the train crash in Ohio. Instead, he bemoaned the whiteness of the construction industry. It's a miracle this country is able to function under this regime. And look, you know, here's the weird thing. The outrage machine on the right has finally found out, hey, there was something going on over there. Hey, some big giant plumes of smoke and stuff. Lots of it. And again, you know, it's interesting that the people who are responsible for this, in my view, are the ones who were silent the entire time until now the outrage machine goes, oh, Pete Buttigieg didn't mention it. Now let's attack Buttigieg and Biden and all of them. And look, there's a lot of attacks to go around. Now, it's interesting. While she's attacking the guy who's the head of the Department of Transportation, didn't mention the fact that the guy who was the congressional representative in that area, Republican Bill Johnson, chair of the House committee on the subcommittee on environment, manufacturing, and critical materials. Environment, kind of there. Not a peep until the outrage machine said, hey, over here. And a couple hours ago, finally, a miraculous statement. And going to be on with the Hannitys. And now he's got his shot. This is his shot to be somebody. Now he does say something. The thing is, I've been asking why this hasn't been front page news for the last week. Well, since it happened, 5 giant cars carrying 40,000 gallons of this vinyl chloride. This is honestly, this is one of the largest ecological disasters in this country's history. I mean, this is a lot. They're saying, it's being reported that 100,000 gallons of this stuff, or 1 million pounds of this vinyl chloride, has either been leaked, spilled, or burned. And there are people in the area reporting their cars and their houses and everything covered with acid rain and phosgene and all this stuff that, you know, not great for you. Not good for you. In fact, I looked up phosgene. Phosgene is a poisonous gas. So if you're breathing this stuff in, not good for you. And you look at the pictures of the people, the cleanup crew, I'm not seeing the kind of safety precautions that I would like to see. Now, the hydrogen chloride that comes out of this, because it's been reported that obviously this burning of this stuff and all this stuff produces hydrogen chloride, not good for the nose, skin, eyes, throat, larynx, all that stuff. It's kind of bad for you. All of it bad for you. And no reporting. And yet last week, you had a guy, I think it was Wednesday, a reporter had the audacity to ask a question during the DeWine press conference. They arrested him for the crime of, yes, speaking while the DeWine was speaking. And there's been no real attention. And we've been talking about it. Last week we had Jared Cassidy on from the Smart Union saying, hey, what's going on there? Finally. And again, the outrage machine, this isn't about finding out what went wrong. This isn't about helping the people on the ground. This isn't about making sure it doesn't happen again. This is about just outrage. This is about being mad at Pete Buttigieg. Now, I find it interesting that the mayor of the town, a guy named Trent Conaway, he's been quoted as saying, this isn't going to get swept under the rug. Not going to happen. I'm not going to be the country bumpkin that gets talked over by a big corporation. We're going to hold their feet to the fire. They're going to do what they say they're going to do, and they're going to protect the people of this town. No, they're not. I think the last person in the room who knows that, no, they're not. Because again, this wasn't allowed to get out. This wasn't front page news everywhere. This wasn't the story of our. We were too busy talking about stoves and balloons. Someone tweeted, Joe Biden issued an executive order to derail the train to get us off of talking about balloons. I mean, that's how crazy things have gotten. And the thing that bothers me is when you throw out a comment of going, hey, this is wrong. We should be dealing with the situation. It immediately, especially on the right, becomes, well, you're blaming Donald Trump for this. And you go, no, there's blame there. You know, during the Trump years, he did roll back a lot of regulations on this industry. This is the central tenet of conservative ideology. This is what the Republicans have been fighting for decades. This idea that you're going to allow corporate America to self-police themselves. This idea that corporate America will do what's in their best interest. And that then that will then protect from the rest of us. No, that's not how it happens. They do what's in their best interest, their bottom line best interest, because they know we're never going to hold them accountable. Right now, as we speak, it's being reported that the railroad, Norfolk Southern, is out there. How did they put it? Was it offering $1,000 inconvenience fee checks to all of the residents that they can get a hold of? They're offering, here's a little bit of money to help you get through this. Now, of course, you have to know, anytime they're offering you something like this up front, it's going to come with a clause that you're not going to sign on to a class action lawsuit. You're not going to sue them for big money, that there's going to be some liability shields down the road. You know this is how they work. And again, I go back to Trent Conaway's comments. I'm not going to be the country bumpkin that gets rolled over. This is a high poverty area where people are going to jump at this $1,000 because they desperately need it. I don't see anybody going in there going, hey, we need to set up all kinds of abilities for people to stay the hell away from their homes and make sure that they're made whole through the wages that they lose. None of that. I'm sorry, not seeing it. Where's Lauren Boebert? Where's Bill Johnson? Where are the rest of these Republicans who represent these rural areas who are going to get screwed over in this? And that's not even talking about the workers in this. But again, I got taken to task of, you're just blaming Republicans and Donald Trump. And you go, yeah, there's a lot of blame here. There's a lot of blame for Republicans, Trump, and conservative corporate Democrats. There is a lot of blame here that allowed this industry to monopolize, that has privatized, profitized, and silenced the voice of we the people in all of this. And I keep coming back to, it's the belief, it's the ideology. If you can blame anything, and again, we don't know what happened yet. We will get an NTSB report, and we've reached out to our friends over at the BLET, who fortunately sit on that board, and will, when the report comes out, they will come tell us exactly what it is. But I can tell you already what I think it is. It's the fact that this industry has moved to this precision scheduled railroading. Which means, in short, slashing employees, cutting safety, cutting corners, and seeking the most profitable ways to line their pockets. Cut your way to profits. An industry that had thousands, tens of thousands more workers. back when it had thousands fewer cars. We see the report. For miles, this train was evidently on fire. An axle looked like it was on fire. This is what's being reported. And, you know, the sad reality is when you have a 30% cut in the workforce over the last couple of decades, when you have the kind of rush inspections, when you have the kind of waiver system, again, deregulating to the point where corporate America will take care of it. Don't worry, they can police themselves. They'll do what's in their best interest. When bad things happen, are you surprised? And look, it is common that axles heat up. It is common. It's common that axles fail. It's rare that an axle being on fire would cause it to derail. I understand that from the beginning. But here's the thing. This is one of those really weird kind of moments. Even on while this thing was on fire, evidently these trains, the tracks have these end of train fail devices. What used to be known as cabooses, you know, that had people in them that were monitoring things and you know, making sure that, yeah, I don't know, that the flames aren't shooting out of the side of the train. These things fail almost every time. Almost every trip they fail at some point. And the other beautiful part of this, there's no regulation on these. These aren't mandated. They're not regulated. No one's overseeing them. So who knows if they're even on? It's like one of those cute little boxes that has a camera in it that doesn't have a wire leading out of it, that no one knows if it's actually working. This is kind of that. They go, look, we've got the thing. It's like the cleanup after 9/11. They had all those red lights all around the pit that were supposed to go off when the air quality reached a certain level that weren't actually wired up. So all of those people who thought, hey, the lights aren't on, the air quality must be okay, I can breathe in this crap. Sorry. Now, again, I go back to this. For me, the main parts of this are very simple. It's the monopolization. We've got these companies get too big and too powerful and unaccountable. Their lobbying arms are extremely powerful because they've been able to hold off regulations for decades. During the Obama term, they wanted to put a different braking system on. Remember when the oil trains were blowing up all the time or derailing? They wanted a different braking system. They wanted to upgrade that with new technology, not Civil War era technology, something new. And the first thing the Trump administration did when they came in, wiped it all away. It's this kind of, this hatred of regulation, of oversight, that's caused part of this. Now, as I was talking to people who are in the industry today, I said, what are the big problems? And I said, everyone agreed, it's the waivers. The railroads are giving these regulatory waivers all the time. For instance, if every car is supposed to be, let's just say, a car is supposed to be inspected every 1,000 miles or every 5,000 or whatever that number is. The railroad goes, well, we didn't get around to it. Give us a waiver to double or triple. We'll get it next time around. And evidently, these things are coming fast and furious. They own the regulatory body because there's a swinging door between what little regulation there is and the industry. And this is, again, another one of these problems that we've allowed to spring up around us, that in the mild, minor regulations that we do have, there's a swinging door between the industry and the overseers. That has to stop. And as one person told me today, there's this guy, Carl Alexi. He's a Trump appointee who is responsible for all these waivers. And it's basically just pencil whip. Whatever the industry wants, the industry gets. Because, hey, it's bad on business to hold them accountable. It's bad on business to make them do the things that need to be done. And as one person reminded me, it's not about customer service in the rail industry. It's about these metrics that they throw out that the owners of the companies want. It's the bean counters hitting their metrics, hitting their goals. That makes the owners, that makes them happy. And you go, well, who are the owners? Well, everyone today was going, Warren Buffett owns all the railroads. No, he doesn't. He owns BNSF. This was Norfolk Southern. BNSF is out on the West Coast. This is Norfolk Southern. When you fall down into the rabbit hole to see who owns Norfolk Southern, it's a web of private equity groups who are unaccountable to you or me, with lobbying dollars that are just enormous. So again, you look at these disasters, you look at this and you go, who are they going to hold accountable? You know, I go back to the mayor. Who are you going to hold accountable, mayor? Nobody. Because they're shielded from liability and they own a political party and a half. What are you going to do? This is one of those moments where, you know, look, am I happy with how Buttigieg has handled things? No. Do I understand you've got to clean it up before you can find out what happened? Yeah. Should there be much more being done? Yes. But again, this comes back down to how little media coverage this has gotten and how it's not the sexy stuff. We were too busy focused on a woman walking around Congress with a balloon, looking like a furry in her coat. We're too busy listening to the Boberts of the world who are throwing bombs. Instead of going, hey, how do we have a government oversight system that ensures that communities and workers and citizens are safe? So at the end of this, we're going to get some mealy mouth kind of jumbled response out of this. And I said at the very day it happened, I said eventually they're going to try and blame the worker for this, the engineer. They're going to try and blame them for this. But what's really at stake here, what really, in my view, is the problem here, the fact that we've allowed these railroads to consolidate from, 40 in the 80s down to 6 today, that we've allowed them to gut employment to the point to where they're talking about wanting just one person on a train that's 5 miles long, and on a training setup that they want to cut from 16 weeks or 18 weeks down to 6. There's nothing good with saying, here, corporate America, police yourself. It's kind of like, you know, to be honest, it's kind of like saying, here, Rick, have a radar gun. I want you to track speeders, and you're going to have the only radar gun, and giving me a car that'll do 200 miles an hour down the road. What are you going to do? I'm going to do 200 miles an hour down the road because I've got the only radar gun. Same scenario here. They know there's nobody watching. And the ones that are, they know they own. So, Mayor, I wish you the best. I hope you do hold these people accountable. I hope they don't run over another country bumpkin. But I got to tell you, doesn't look good for you. Doesn't look good at all. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickssmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickssmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Super Bowl on Sunday was entertaining. I enjoyed watching the game. A little disappointed in the ending. I didn't see a holding call. Didn't see it. And I know they got the guy who they called it on to say, yeah, I'm not buying it. That could have been a much more exciting ending to a game than what it was. But it was interesting. But for me, the moment that caught my attention, and look, there was, a fun game. Had a wonderful day. Had some incredible food. My wife made just a beautiful spread, in best wings she's ever made. Fabulous stuff. But there was a shot where they went from the game up to the boxes to look at the celebrities. You know, you got to see you got to see LeBron, you got to see Bradley Cooper, you got to see a whole bunch of people, because evidently we want to know that our rich and famous are watching football like the rest of us. But they panned over to Elon Musk, because of course, you know, why not? Why not? If he's there, you got to point it out. But he was sitting there with Rupert Murdoch. And it's one of those moments where, you know, my mind goes into these really, really, you know, interesting places. My mother always used to say, you're judged by the company you keep. Because I had some friends she didn't like. And, you know, she was right. Oddly enough, you know, as I tell my kids the exact same thing now. Interesting how that stuff plays out. But, you know, I'm looking at Musk and Murdoch sitting next to each other. Now, you'd go, well, what's the big deal about that, Rick? Well, the big deal about that is Musk bought Twitter under the idea that he was going to open it up and he was going to make it more transparent and he was going to do all these wonderful things about democracy and free speech and all this stuff. And yet, interestingly enough, all we've really seen him do is attack people that he considers the left or people that he considers, you know, not in line with his thinking. Twitter was a space where left voices had a little bit more power than the right. It's true. Mostly because the right abandoned it. Because they couldn't play by the rules. And this, again, this is what the right does masterfully. If you watched the hearings, listen to Lauren Boebert and her clan going on about how she was shadow banned. She wasn't shadow banned. She violated the rules. They banned her. And then she got out of Twitter jail and came back and did it again. And this is what the right did all the time. So as they weren't following the rules, they were complaining, they're silencing us, playing the victim. Oh, nobody plays the victim like a conservative. Oh, especially a religious zealot conservative. Nobody plays the martyr like that. But to see Murdoch and Musk sitting next to each other, you go, if you're Musk and you're Musk's handlers or your PR people, why would you want that image of, you know, the hero of the right-wing machine being seated next to your guy who's the champion of free speech and the champion of transparency? Why would you want to see, would you do that? Now, look, I've always said, you know, he bought Twitter specifically to destroy what was only a very small advantage for the quote-unquote left or for Democratic voices. And congratulations, he has done that. But you can't now, or again, my favorite, his ego is the other part of this, fires his engineer because his impressions went down. I mean, wow. I mean, that's one of those wow moments. But again, this idea that the right keeps throwing, this victimization, they're stealing my free speech. And I had someone say, well, what if Elon Musk, you know, blocked you? I go, he has a couple of times. Twitter is, they have blocked us. They have all of our stuff is up. Our impressions are through the roof, all this stuff. But the engagement, the mentions, all that stuff, all down. It's because of the way they've changed their algorithms. And this is how you manipulate the system to get what the results you want. And this is what Twitter has done and all social media companies have done. But it's not a free speech issue. Because understand, free speech is between you and your government. Now, they are trying, above all trying, to say that there was collusion between the U.S. government and Twitter to silence your voices. And that the stat I love, and I forget what idiot said it, but the stat I love is that, you know, if you know, people on Twitter would have known about Hunter Biden's laptop, 53% of people who voted, 53% would have changed their vote. I'm going, I don't know what orifice you pulled that out of. It was the Twitter files, Rick. Yeah, I know. I don't know what orifice they pulled that out of. I have a pretty good guess. But to think about, there are 53% of the people on Twitter in this country, but somehow it was going to change 53% of the vote. Again, that victim card. Oh, they're so good at it. But the thing is they now have the power of committees. And this is all we're going to hear. We're going to hear, oh, poor, poor, pitiful me over and over and over. And where's Warren Zevon when we need him to at least make it somewhat entertaining? Because so far, it's the clown show we expected. Without
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Brief. UN Humanitarian Aid Chief Martin Griffiths is in Syria to survey the damage from last week's devastating earthquake. He says Syria's president has agreed to open two new crossing points from Turkey to Syria so desperately needed aid can be delivered.
The trauma of the people we spoke to was visible. And this is a trauma which the world needs to heal.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says a flying object shot down over Alaska, Canada, and Lake Huron since Friday.
These three events, each of them presented a risk to safety of flight. And we don't know if they were actually collecting intelligence, but because of the route that they took, out of an abundance of caution, we want to make sure that we have the ability to examine what these things are.
At least eight people are hurt in Brooklyn, New York, after police say a U-Haul truck driver intentionally drove off the road and into pedestrians. This man saw the truck drive by.
We were just following to see if he would, like, you know, come to a stop, and he just wouldn't.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Madner. Here's what you need to know. Two more UW branch campuses have low enrollments after the UW system absorbed their campuses 5 years ago. Faculty and students at UW Washington County and Waukesha campuses are frustrated with the lack of support from UW Milwaukee. Most branch campus faculty and instructional staff are earning less than those with the same jobs at the main campus, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The drop in enrollment numbers and the news about the UW Richland campus ending in-person classes this spring as both students and faculty worried about the future of their branch campuses. A chef who grew up cooking and eating Hmong dishes with his family in Port Edwards, Wisconsin, is now a semi-finalist for the James Beard Award's Best Chef in the Midwest. Ye Vang now runs the Union Hmong Kitchen in Minneapolis. Finalist for the James Beard Award announced March 29th. Awards given out June 5th in Chicago. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Max Inc. Radio, we are local music with Pete from the Skin Tones.
Here, you have been warned. Not only Madison, the rest of Wisconsin and the U.S., Skin Tones, we're coming at you. We're going to be committing rock atrocities. We're fit. We're in shape. We are tight. We are muscular. We are attractive for our ages. And we are sexy as hell.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today the president put out a nice little infographic about the bridges that they're going to be working on. And you know, I've been over all of those. You know, the Golden Gate Bridge, the one down in Louisiana, that big one, I-10. the one in Kentucky, lots of these bridges. I mean, we've got, what was the last statistic? 46,000 structurally deficient bridges in this country. 46,000. One of the things that I had said for years, you know, back in 2012, Republicans in the House here in Pennsylvania, they voted on a resolution to make 2012 the year of the Bible. And I was like, you know, I don't disagree with that. I mean, there are a lot of people praying. This is 2012. I mean, we're talking over a decade ago. I said, you know, I don't disagree with that. A lot of people are praying. They're praying that they're going to get from one side of the bridge to the other without it collapsing. And are you surprised? The answer is no. We haven't done anything really since. And look, you know, during the Obama years, there was lots of talk about shovel-ready projects, and they did some. But finally, you've got an administration that got a big piece of legislation, a historic piece of legislation moved that's going to help fix some of these. Again, not all of them. We have 46,000 structurally deficient bridges. Some of them over 50 years old. And you go, you know, some of them need some upgrades, need some repairs, some looking into. And it's interesting to me to watch as I was, again, it's rare that I get into the comments, but I saw the president's post and I go, let's see what people are saying. Let's see what the troll machine is throwing out. And it's interesting that the folks on the right think that, you know, our infrastructure is perfect, that it's a waste of money, that we shouldn't be spending money on infrastructure. That very bizarre kind of world we're in that it comes down to who's in office. Now, I go back to, I had someone ask me about, you know, about Trump, and I said, you know, it was one of the things that I agreed with on Trump. I agreed that, you know, infrastructure, I agreed manufacturing, I agreed China, I agreed with Trump on some major issues that were an opportunity, and I think Democrats would have come along had they had a plan. I remember every week was infrastructure week, and there was always some display at the White House, some pomp and circumstance, some photo op, him playing with trucks or shovels or out in the backyard with bricks or whatever. But no policy, no legislation, no movement. And I said, look, again, I agreed with him on these things. You know, this is how politics are supposed to work. The things we agree on, we move on. It's interesting to me that we didn't get as many Republicans to sign on to that infrastructure legislation as I would hope. It's incredible to me. And it comes down to policy after policy. There are places where the right and the left can come together and agree on things. Back when the Tea Party, you know, sprung up, I was telling my labor friends, you've got to get involved in this Tea Party movement. Because the underlying current of what they're screaming about is right. It's your message. You know, Trump basically took Bernie Sanders' message and added a little sprinkle of this, a little sprinkle of hatred, a little sprinkle of misogyny, a little sprinkle of grab her by the you-know-what, and made it his own. But that was labor's message for years. Infrastructure, manufacturing, China, all of that stuff, trade, bad trade deals. All of that was in their wheelhouse. So there was an opportunity to come together and use that moment to solve some real problems for working people. But again, we're not allowed to solve real problems for working people. It's those problems that keep us exploitable. It's those problems that keep us at each other instead of at the very wealthy, getting the pitchforks going after the very wealthy. And the wealthy understand this. They understand as long as we're fighting over balloons, as long as we're fighting over stove troopers, as long as we're pointing fingers at each other and going, yo, 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 we're not looking at them. So I see that there's a trade agreement, a trade deal that may be coming down the pike. The Indo-Pacific Economic Framework trade deal, the IPEF, they are calling it. And I'll tell you, when these trade deals pop up, I'm always looking at them with a jaundiced eye. I'm always looking at them sideways going, yeah, the last ones haven't worked out very well. Now, I do understand that we do need to figure out how to come together on trade issues. We do need to figure out some mechanisms for things to actually be traded instead of just buying cheap stuff from overseas and shipping it back in here. There have got to be some things where we say there are baselines. And also, again, China has done something masterful. They have basically, in the 4 years that Trump did not play in the international sphere, the Chinese filled the void. They bought up minerals across the globe. They bought up governments across the globe. They bought systems across the globe. They've invested in places where we didn't. And it's going to be a little bit more interesting. These trade deals, like it or not, are how we used to do diplomacy. You know, George Carlin always did a funny bit on, on Vietnam. You know why we're there in Vietnam. And you go, nobody was supposed to know. He goes, to free those people and give them industry, U.S. industry, because those are the two middle letters of the word industry, U.S. And he wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong that we were just going around the world looking for exploitable cheap labor and have been doing it for decades. So when I look at this, I go, is this more of that? Or is this an opportunity to raise standards? Is this an opportunity to ensure that the products that we use, whether it's cell phones or T-shirts, aren't made by child labor or slave labor? To ensure that we don't have environments where the reason corporate America goes there is because they can dump all over our environment, without the care of causing any undue harm to their bottom line. There's a lot here. And, the idea being that I'll be honest, I'm not thrilled that Democrats are part of this. I'm not thrilled that Republicans are part of it. I wish working people were at the heart of this. I had someone remind me today that, Joe Biden was, part of the whole push to NAFTA and how Donald Trump was against NAFTA. And I'm going, I don't know how he was back during in the 90s. I don't know what his position was. And I don't think he did. In fact, all I know is he made a lot of ties and a lot of stuff in China. If you ever watched the David Letterman video, yeah, right there. But my problem is Democrats, to a part, have been just as bad on trade as Republicans. Am I hopeful that Joe Biden has seen the light and pushing back on some of the neoliberalism that hasn't worked over the last 40 years, pushing back on the supply side voodoo Reaganomic and moving us maybe in a direction that's going to open up trade lanes and make lives better on both sides of the border? We'll see. I'm hopeful. But I was reminded today that it was Donald Trump that got rid of the investor state dispute settlement in NAFTA. And I said, yeah, that is a great thing. And why did that happen? That happened because the labor movement fought heavily for it. They fought heavily for getting included in this agreement because of Democratic votes. An increased minimum wage on auto workers in Mexico, the right to unionize in Mexico. They got a lot of things in there that, honestly, no Republican would have ever stood for. So in that vein, Trump did something right. And it was because you had a labor movement using the Democrats to push the agenda of working people. So I'm looking at this moment and I'm going, is there a way that we can ensure that there are protections in place that we don't deal with trade agreements with countries that still allow union assassinations? Like Colombia. We've got a trade agreement with Colombia where they literally take trade unionists up in planes and throw them out. Where there have been stories over the years of trade unionists being shot in the head, pulled off buses and being shot in the head. You can't have trade deals with those people. And if you do, there's got to be a mechanism to hold someone accountable. We can't deal with countries that are heavily into human trafficking and forced labor and child labor and all of that stuff. So as I understand right now, there's a push to get the Biden administration to sign on to some certain things that are going to make sure that we get those labor rights, we get environmental rights, we help use this as a driver to deal with climate change, to deal with digital trade and the future issues that are coming up. Digital trade is a huge thing. There's no real framework on what that looks like. So I'm at this moment where the hope The hope is with Biden, who is, in my view, still the most pro-union president in my lifetime, that this is going to be front and center, that ensuring that American workers are protected, that provisions for Buy American are allowed, or, you know, for domestic, I shouldn't say Buy American, I should say domestic production for domestic consumption. Because, you know, I don't really care if the UK or Germany or anyone, you know, if you're buying stuff to use in your government, to use in your procurement, it should be made in your backyard. I think we need to move back to an era where this idea of open trade borders, meaning we're gonna have one country manufacture all of our stuff, and hopefully it'll be cheap and we'll exploit labor there, and then we can all live off. I think we have to go back to the idea of domestic production for domestic consumption, where we start making the stuff we need. We haven't thought that way in a long time. I know that's old school. That's our grandparents' generation. Yeah, and look how well they did. So we'll see. I'm anxious. I'm interested. I'm guardedly optimistic, but also concerned, because another one of these trade deals could be the undoing of working people, and that's part of the worry. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. What labor union would you say has the coolest name? The Sons of Vulcan would most certainly have to be in the running. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1865. That was the day the Sons of Vulcan ended their 8-month strike and won a union contract. The Vulcans were skilled steelworkers. Many were immigrants from England, Scotland, and Wales. They worked at puddling, the process by which carbon was burnt off of molten iron in order to form steel. It was tough work that required physical strength, skill, and experience. The Vulcans first formed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1858. A skilled trade union, only puddlers were eligible to join. They called their locals forges. They took their name, Vulcan, from the Roman god of fire and volcanoes. With the ongoing Civil War, the demand for steel grew. The work of the Vulcans was vital to the union's war effort. But as the Civil War drew to a close, puddlers' wages were threatened. The Vulcans declared a national strike. The strike wore on for 8 months. Finally, the industry leaders agreed to the workers' demands. The Vulcans won wage increases tied to industry profits, as well as union recognition. With this victory, the Vulcans' membership grew. By 1873, the number of Vulcans had topped 3,000 members. Unfortunately, that year saw a major economic panic sweep across the United States. The economic crisis took a toll on union membership. Another downfall of the union was their policy not to admit black members. This meant that employers could hire black labor in an effort to undermine the union. By 1876, the Vulcans had merged with other steel unions to form the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
They love the children. They love the children. Care about the children. Care about the children an awful lot. In fact, they care about the children so much out there in Wyoming, they're going to make sure that they can get married whenever they want. Evidently, the Republican Party is seeking to kill a bill that evidently it was working its way through the state legislature that would have raised the state's minimum age to get married to a whopping age of 16. Their argument is, well, you know, if you put an arbitrary age on something, it's gonna interfere on parental rights and religious liberty. Seriously? That's the argument? And the, yeah, that's the argument. Everything's going to come back to parental rights and religious liberty. Everything. You know, Nazi homeschooling, parents' rights, religious liberty. Allowing 12-year-olds to marry, who knows? It's insane. But it's religious liberty. And eventually we're going to get to that point. And I've always said that the fight over making this a Christian country is going to be interesting once we've staked the flag in the ground. You've got the Dove flag out there next to the American flag. And we're solidly Christian country. The fun will be once the religious sects begin eating each other. And then we'll see just how bizarre these folks really are. Now, look, I've said this before, and I know my religious friends are going to, you're talking bad about religion. No, I'm not talking about the sane, rational people who are good, decent, honest people. I'm talking about these crazy people. I'm talking about people who go, no, we can't have this onerous law that says a 16-year-old can't get married without, it's insane. It's literally nuts. But there you have it. Now, it doesn't stop there. You know, and look, in this country, the move, unfortunately, seems to be putting women, girls, mostly girls, back in the kitchen barefoot and pregnant. It seems more about control and power of their everyday lives. And I point to Virginia, where evidently the Youngkin administration is advocating this idea that law enforcement should be able to check your daughter's menstrual cycles on their little apps. Now, again, as a parent, I don't know, and I honestly, I don't, caveat, I actually don't know if my daughters use these. It's not my business to know, but I've advocated for them to not. Maybe go old school with a calendar. We'll get you a paper calendar. Because what they're advocating for in Virginia, this is scary stuff, is to allow law enforcement to use these apps, the information off of these apps. And they've actually proposed a budget that would earmark and put money for prosecuting and imprisoning women and doctors who receive and perform abortions. I mean, this is invasive stuff. Now, remember, these are the people who told us that they're the party of individual liberty. They're the party of small, less intrusive government. That they're the party of get out of our lives, except I guess if you're a teenage girl. This is the weird kind of moment that we're in. And what's amazing to me is there are still women who vote for this kind of stuff. Now, the argument is, if we allow this kind of exemption, if we allow women to be able to use these apps to track their thing, it would be a slippery slope. It'd be a problematic standard and potentially lead to more of us not being able to track what women do. And my thought was, look, I guess I'm old because I still remember, you know, the idea that we should have the right to privacy, you know, in our persons, in our papers. Am I the only one who still thinks this way? Now, I know. Technically, the phone is not paper. Because this is how conservatives think. If it's not enumerated, if the founding fathers didn't say that you have the right to privacy in your cell phones and your digital documents, it doesn't exist. This is the thinking. Because this is what they tell me all the time. Well, that's not written exactly the way you said it was. No, because the founders would have had no idea of a woman's menstrual cycle, let alone an app that would be tracking it. But here we are. And this is, again, one of these moments. You know, how can they get away with this? They can because, well, they're the party of smaller, less intrusive government. They're just not intruding on, well, you right now. And then, again, I come back to this moment of what is up and what is down. For instance, the whole Social Security fight. I'm still getting people saying, see, Rick, the Republicans never wanted to destroy Social Security. And I'm going, what? They've only been wanting to destroy Social Security since it was proposed. Paul Krugman had an interesting article where he walks through this. And he said, look, the reality is Republicans, you know, have been trying to make deep cuts in Social Security every time they see that there's a political window to do it. Every time they see this chance, they jump at it. And then when, you know, people get outraged, when Granny goes, I'm getting my cane to beat you, they go, no, it's Democrats. Just Democrats are smearing us. Democrats are making us look bad. No, this is, as I said over the weekend on our podcast, this is one of those moments of how dare you hold me accountable for those things that I said. But this is where we are. And I keep coming back to that, I think it was Maya Angelou who said, you know, if someone tells you who they are, believe them. When do we believe them? Answer, probably never. Because, interestingly enough, most recent analysis of Congress, and this is one of those interesting things. It's one of those weird kind of... well, those weird stories, because, you know, people say, well, you know, country's gotten much more extreme because of gerrymandering and because of, you know, the extremism and all this. Well, what this most recent study finds out is it's true. In Democratic districts that are gerrymandered or are safe, quote unquote, safe districts, the wants and needs of the people being heard in ways makes those representatives a little more willing to go out the extreme and start demanding things, you know, like paid sick leave, you know, like maternal leave, you know, like health care for everyone, you know, like child care for families so that, you know, if both parents have to work, they can afford it. You know, those really hippie, liberal, socialist, commie things. And what they found on the other side, because you go, well, then, you know, if it's true on the left, it's got to be true on the right. What they found is that the most gerrymandered districts weren't any more extreme than any of the other districts. They're finding the entire freaking Republican Party is off its rocker and has gone completely off the deep end. So it's not just, you know, the districts that feel safe where people are feel emboldened to say, hey, there are things that we want and need, and this is our ideology, the entire Republican Party. And I go back to the reality is the Republican Party is bought and paid for. The moneyed interests own the Republican Party. I've asked for 18 years, show me a piece of legislation that a Republican has dreamt up, proposed, passed, and gotten signed that sole purpose is to help working people. And in 18 years, nothing. Because there is nothing. Because after all, Republicans hate working people. Look at their policies. Whereas you look at some of the left, you know, their push may be a little even more uncomfortable than I'm with, and may go, you know, hey, obviously you're not into winning. But at least they're pushing ideas that are helping working families. The basic tenet of the Democratic Party right now is, you know, how do we get a system where people can rise up, where a job does give people the ability to support themselves, support their families? The idea of bread, yes, but roses too. The idea that a job should be more than just basically making ends meet, that it should make lives better. But here again, we're in this one of these moments where the megaphone keeps throwing out these messages that a lot of my working class friends have bought into because it's all they hear. And then feel defensive every time the Republicans flip on this switch to say, oh, see, look, they're coming for whatever. They're coming for your guns. There's no legislation to do that. They're coming for your stoves. There's no legislation to do that. You know, down the line, they're coming for your light bulbs. I still got light bulbs. I got light bulbs all around me. They're coming for your toilets. Yeah, I got one too. They got those too. But fear and smear seems to work. But when you start saying, hey, they're coming for your daughter's menstrual cycle, the right doesn't get upset at all. And I got to tell you, as a parent, I'd be losing my ever-loving flipping mind. So the question is when do we wake up from this collective malaise? When do we wake up from our silo thinking? When do we wake up and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we do need to, I don't know, start working on those things that we can agree on. I don't know. Got lots to get to. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Also, want to hear your thoughts, questions, comments. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.